So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, Text Number 21. And we're not going to read the Sanskrit, because it's a long purport. And it's a long Sanskrit. Translation. Lord Brahma was then worshipped by Manu, who respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinges of resentment. Priyavrata, having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable by the endeavor of mundane mind or words. Please repeat. Lord Brahma was then worshipped by Manu, who respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. I guess that was Manu trying to satisfy Lord Brahma. It's English. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinges of resentment. Having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable by the endeavor of mundane mind or words. So now they'll purport. Manu was certainly very satisfied that Lord Brahma had persuaded his son Priyavrata to take the responsibility for ruling the world. A little bit different from nowadays. Someone gets a post, only God can drag him away. But here's someone who's trying to get rid of ruling the universe. So I guess it's not that good to rule the universe. Although Brahma had forced Priyavrata to accept the management of worldly affairs, thus breaking his vow to remain brahmacharya and completely engaged in devotional service, Narada and Priyavrata did not look upon Brahma with resentment. Narada was not at all angry that he had been frustrated in making Priyavrata a disciple. Both Priyavrata and Narada were exalted personalities who knew how to respect Brahma. Therefore, instead of looking upon Brahma with resentment, they very feelingly offered him their respect. Lord Brahma then returned to his celestial abode known as Satyaloka, which is described here as being impeccable and being unapproachable by words. It is stated in this verse that Lord Brahma returned to his residence, which is as important as his own personality. Lord Brahma is the creator of this universe and the most exalted personality within it. His lifetime is described in the Bhagavad Gita 8:17. Sahasra yuga paryantam ahuryad brahmano vidu. The total duration of the four yugas is 4,300,000 years. And when that is multiplied 1,000 times, it equals 12 hours in the life of Brahma. Therefore, we cannot factually comprehend even 12 hours of Brahma's life, to say nothing of the 100 years that constitute his entire lifetime. How then can we understand his abode? The Vedic literatures describe that in Satyaloka, there is no birth, death, old age, or disease. In other words, since Satyaloka is situated next to Brahmaloka, or the Brahman effulgence, it is almost as good as Vaikuntha Loka. Lord Brahma's abode is practically indescribable from our present status. Therefore, it has been described as avang manasagochara, or beyond the description of our words and the imagination of our minds. The Vedic literatures that describe the abode of Lord Brahma, yad vai par yat par dyam tad upa-ramishtyam yatra shoko na jara na mrityor nartir na chodvega. In Satyuga, which is situated many millions and billions of years away, there is no lamentation, nor is there old age, death, anxiety, or the influence of enemies. So, read the translation again. Lord Brahma, who was then worshipped by Manu, respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinges of resentment. Having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable by the endeavor of mundane minds or words. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tiramane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Bracharane Nirvi Shesha Shinivadi Paskatya De Satarane. The activities of Priyavrata Maharaj are very instructive to us because they help us understand how to live practically in this world as devotees, even in household life. And in this particular verse, it's very instructive to understand that there's a difference between Krishna and the ordinary living entity, even he be as exalted as Narada Muni, Priyavrata, or even Lord Brahma. That no one knows exactly what we have to do as well as Krishna does. And the other lesson we can learn here is that to find out what Krishna wants us to do, we have to go through a system of authority. And that authority is not simply official authority, as explains here in the case of Brahma. Brahma is not just like an ordinary living entity who just happens to have some post, and therefore he comes once in a while and tells everyone what to do, and then flies back, because he's not interested in the results. He just likes to come down and lord it over once in a while. No, he comes down out of his mercy, because where Lord Brahma lives, there is no need for any material gain, nor is there any fear of material loss. Of course, when it says here there's no birth, death, old age, and disease, we have to take that in a relative context. In other words, in Satyaloka, people don't have heart attacks. There's no incidence of cancer or lung disease. They don't smoke cigarettes there, so therefore, people don't die untimely. Of course, everyone dies, because when the universe goes away, everyone there goes away too. And as far as birth, they weren't there forever, so they must have come there at some particular time. But in terms of old age, they don't grow old like we grow old until the time of the annihilation. Then they look about the same. Maybe they look a little younger every year. I don't know. I haven't been there for a long time, so I can't tell you. In any case, relative to our existence, there is no birth. In other words, they've been there relative to our existence for such a long time. We don't really talk about Brahma. Brahma right now is 50 years old, I heard. He's approaching middle age. I guess he is middle age, right in middle age. And it's 12 o'clock. It's right about time for lunch. He has a long lunch compared to us. In any case, Brahma, he's been there for so long that for us, it's practically he never took birth. Nor will he compare it to us, if we stay here in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga. So many times we'll have to leave this body, or somebody. So for him, he's going to be there for a long, long time, relative to all our existence. Relative to eternal existence, Prabhupada, in one purport, says it's like a flash of lightning in the sky. For us, it's such an incalculable, long, long duration of time. But for eternality, relative to eternality, it is simply a flash of lightning in the sky. Lord Brahma is coming, just like the bubbles are rising in the ocean, and then they disappear in the due course of time. But of course, we can't think like that, because we can't think like that. We're just, as it says, inconceivable to us, and nor should we try, because just like when Brahma was seeing how Krishna had turned himself into so many cowherd boys, so many calves, and then Krishna decided that from each cowherd boy and calf, who is actually himself, he manifests himself as a Vishnu form. We're struggling to see one Vishnu form. He saw thousands and thousands of Vishnu forms, and all the Brahmas came from all the different universes and Shivas, and time came and all the... So Brahma was starting to get a little bewildered by the whole thing. Brahma, who has the intelligence to create a universe, engineer it, of course under Krishna's direction, but still, for someone to engineer a universe is quite a good task. It's a good engineering feat. Even he became completely overwhelmed by bewilderment, seeing Krishna and his different energies manifested in reality. So if Brahma is bewildered by all that, what to speak of our tiny little minds? How much can we really grasp about reality? Nor should we really worry about so much reality, because whether we understand how Brahma Loka is going on or not, it's going to go on anyhow. It's not like we better hurry up and figure it out or else it's going to fall apart. Unless we send a team of managers there, it's not going to work in the long run. With all the modern theories of how to manage Satya, planets of, like Satya, Satya Loka. No, it's going on fine. Even before they discovered these planets, they were going on fine. Just like sometimes they discover some planet like Pluto or some Uranus, whatever else. And then they give themselves prizes for it and how wonderful it is, how they saved the planet by discovering it. But whatever is going on, Uranus or Neptune or whatever else, or even Saturn or the moon, whatever, it's going on fine without anyone figuring out from here what's going on. They don't need our advice, believe it or not. It's not that we send out satellites to communicate with these personalities and other planets, and finally they say, oh, finally someone has discovered us, and we send back an SOS message. Please help us. No, they're going on fine. They don't need our interference or our understanding. They're not sitting around lonely waiting for America to send up a space probe to understand them. So they felt understood. In any case, it's indescribable, and perhaps it will remain indescribable, but it doesn't really affect us that much. It is not our duty to figure out what's going on in Satya Loka. Our duty is to take the lessons that Priyavrata is showing here to begin with. Although our endeavor is certainly to become Krishna conscious, and part of that is the process of varna and ashram, such as becoming engaged in brahmacharya. Even the householders have to be, in one sense, brahmacharis. Otherwise, household life ceases to be grihastha life, it becomes grihamedi life. And brahmachari life has to be a real brahmachari. Therefore, Krishna says, swadhyaya. First you study about who you really are. And then when you figure out who you really are, then you can do something good for yourself and do something good for everyone else. If you don't know who you are, then entering into household life, which is Dhanam, Dhammas, and Jaga, won't really be very effective if you don't know who you are. So Priyavrata, he wanted to become a brahmachari. He wanted to become a great devotee of Krishna, and he was taking instruction from a great Mahajan, one of the 12 Mahajans. Of course, there are a couple other Mahajans who came with Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is a Mahajan himself. And I believe Swayambhuvamanu is also a Mahajan. And I believe Lord Shiva is also there. So it was three Mahajans against one. And it was the democracy, so they won. No, actually, Lord Brahma, his position in the universe is that he's the spiritual master of Narada Muni, the father of Narada Muni at least. And therefore he had to accept. Lord Brahma didn't come by accident. There was an arrangement by Krishna. After all, bonam janmanamante gyanamamam prapadite vasudeva sarvamiti. That nothing is happening outside of Krishna. When Lord Brahma comes, people have to pay him respect because he's a direct representative of Krishna. He doesn't wander around the universe by accident, butting in or interfering with people's devotional service. It's not his mission in life. Maybe Indra might do that. You might be a little suspect. Indra coming thinking, well, he might take away one of my apsaras or something, so we better interfere. No, but Brahma doesn't do that. Therefore, they listen to him, that someone has to run the universe because Krishna wants that. He wants the universe well run so that people can engage in devotional service. And sometimes a great personality like Priyavrata has to sacrifice his idea temporarily. Well, not actually his idea. In other words, according to our best intelligence, we engage in devotional service. Sitting there on the top of Gandamandana Hill, hearing from Narada Muni is a good idea. Probably if any one of us had the opportunity to take a seminar from Narada Muni, we definitely take the advantage of such a seminar. So he was doing a very nice thing sitting there. But when Lord Brahma came and told him to do something else, he didn't think, oh, this is terrible. Now I'm going to have to fall into Maya. He told me to become a householder. He told me to lord over the universe. Something I had in the back of my mind that I've been trying to repress for a long time. That's why I'm sitting here. No, he took it as service. He didn't take it in any other way. He took it as Krishna's indication how he was going to make further progress in devotional service. Obviously, he was already a very advanced soul because that's how he took it. He took it as what Krishna's will is for my spiritual advancement. I'm sitting here listening to Narada Muni because this is for my spiritual advancement. And Lord Brahma is coming and he's telling me what my further advancement will be from this point on. Therefore, he took Lord Brahma as Krishna's representative. And the nice thing is that Lord Brahma happens to be Krishna's representative. And as we can see from the story, Priyavrata did not fall into Maya. It had a happy ending. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the Bhagavatam. So he became a householder, had the whole universe to lord it over. Lord it over means to, because that's a bad word, lord it over, to more or less control, influence, manage, carry out his conception of how to improve Krishna consciousness, however we want to explain it. He had that opportunity to be apparently a controller of a whole universe, something most people would like to be. But he took it completely in the spirit of devotion. Therefore, he was connected with Krishna at every moment. So much so, and the proof of that is that he didn't fall into Maya, even though he exhibited the activities of a perfect householder. He became a householder and explains that he had a very qualified wife. His wife was not simply some ascetic thinking, well, Priyavrata, he wanted to be a brahmachari. Somehow or another, he had to get married, and now I'm going to have to help him. I'm going to dress in rags and not comb my hair. He'll never become attracted to me. Therefore, he'll never fall into Maya. And I'll do a very nice service. Help him in his brahmacharya life, even though he's supposed to be the head of the universe. No, if you want to be the head of the universe, or if you're supposed to be the head of the universe, in his case, then you have to act as a good householder. Because Lord Brahma is a householder, and the heads of state, the kings are householders, and heads of universes are householders, because the position of management is generally that of a position of a father. You have to take the position of having dependents, and for that, you need a balanced life. A king has a queen, because you need some balance. If it's only control and there's no compassion, if it's only masculine energy and there's no feminine energy, it generally doesn't work very well. But if there's the proper balance, then people are satisfied and they can happily perform their activities in such a way as to advance towards the platform of pure devotional service. So she dressed herself very nicely as a queen should be, or as the wife of the emperor of the universe should be. And she enthused him to be a proper lord of the material nature by loving glances and appropriate gestures and acting accordingly. Because if it's without some impetus from an ordinary person, without getting some impetus from the feminine side, the king has no impetus to control. So therefore kings had queens. So she did her part, because that's what she was supposed to do. And Priyavrata, he accepted her loving glances, her nice dresses, her feminine side. He accepted it, but he never became attached within himself. Not very easy to duplicate, unless you're fully Krishna conscious. He didn't defy the external energy. He didn't become enamored by the material energy. He simply accepted whatever Krishna arranged in the spirit of pure devotion, because he was absorbed in service to Krishna. And he played the part so well that no one could detect that he was playing a part. So that means nirmitra matram bhavasavasachin. Only if one is a perfect instrument for Krishna can one play such a part. Otherwise, there'll be some blinking of the eye. Because of our, in myself, we may be thinking, I don't like this part. I don't want to be here. And someone's going to detect it. Only if one is doing everything purely out of devotion to Krishna can one actually play such a perfect part, so that he can get on a chariot and carve out the grooves of the seven dvipas. What kind of a chariot that is? Bigger than a tractor, that's for sure. Because we can't even imagine what Jambudvipa is. We have so many devotee scientists and trying to figure out what does the universe look like. So he was not only, he was carving out the universe, what to speak of knowing what it looks like. Not a little thing. Jambudvipa is not one small little area. I mean, the earth planet is supposed to be one little part of Jambudvipa on Bharadvarsha. And we're not 100% sure exactly where we're at, where we are, or what it looks like. We don't even know what this planet looks like, what to speak of ourselves. In any case, he was able to do that. So much control, carving out Jambu Dweep, Plaksha Dweep, so many different dweepers. And then be completely aloof from the whole thing, so much so that he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, doing everything just to please Krishna, whether he was sitting as an ascetic on a mountain, meditating on pleasing Krishna, or he was carving out the whole universe, or at least this part, Bhumandala, for the sake of the resonance of Bhumandala, or perhaps of the whole universe. He was simply doing it to please Krishna. And therefore, he was able to remain aloof under all circumstances from the influence of external energy and be able to see everything, be absorbed in internal energy. So much so that his household life is simply an internal energy. The glance of his wife, just like in the spiritual world, it is not that everything is very dull, that Krishna's queens in Dwarka, they have no passion, Krishna has no passion, everyone's just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, we're good, we're good. No, there is real passion, there is real relationship between man and male, real male, real female energy, and it's all blissful. It's all the varieties of rasa. So that's inconceivable to us, what real female energy is, what real male energy is, but it's conceivable gradually, it becomes conceivable as we engage in devotional service to Krishna. Then these different energies are gradually revealed to us, and then we can conceive of them only by that process. So we don't have Lakshmis to lord it over or to control. We're not, but we may have a wife, we may have a husband, we may have children, we may have different duties in this world. And if we try to do those duties for Krishna and give up the desire to think ourselves to be independent controllers and enjoyers of whatever situation Krishna gives us, then our life will become absorbed in the internal energy and we'll be able to understand what the interchanges are of the spiritual energy. Of course, it says, yogas charati manasa, that maya is such that if we learn one lesson, it doesn't mean that necessarily we're completely free from the external energy. Therefore, even we get whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, we should simply utilize that as an opportunity to become better at it in Krishna consciousness. To see ourselves as simply an instrument for Krishna and to pray for the intelligence of how to perform this duty in Krishna consciousness. And if we're not Krishna conscious, we should lament, oh, I'm fallen, I'm so fallen. That mantra will not, is good a couple of times, but we shouldn't chant it too many times because we'll probably get more and more fallen just by chanting that mantra. No, we should realize we're fallen and immediately we should take shelter of the person who can save us from being fallen, Krishna and his bona fide representatives. And to learn from them how to utilize our present service in Krishna consciousness. Not only how to do it better, but how to do it better in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there have been so many controllers of the universe and all of them are highly qualified, but the one that's picked out is Priyavrata, because he was a controller in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, he is the best example of how to be a good manager and how to be a perfect devotee at the same time. How to be a good manager, how to be a good householder and a perfect devotee. How to be so many different things and a good devotee. And out of the two, better to be a good devotee and a lousy householder and a lousy manager. But if you're going to do your service, you should do both. Krishna doesn't want lousy householders and good devotees. He wants both. He wants good householders, good devotees, good managers. He wants us to do, because if we're actually absorbed in the spiritual energy, then Dadami Bhuti Yogam Tam, Krishna will give us intelligence how to do things in such a way as we can come to him. And part of that is just like Yudhisthira Maharaj, he wanted Yudhisthira Maharaj to be the head of the kingdom. He didn't pick someone off the street to be the head of the kingdom. He didn't pick some sage like Vyasadeva to be the head of the kingdom. He picked a good manager and a perfect devotee. So Krishna wants both. But ultimately, he didn't keep Yudhisthira Maharaj in the position of a good manager forever. Ultimately, he wanted him to go back to Godhead because that's the result of being a good manager should be that you go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said, we should manage our life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours a day, we cannot help but think of Krishna. So that's a really good manager. And therefore, he went back to Godhead. So we should manage our lives. Everyone should be a good manager. And whether we have the responsibility of a child, or we have the responsibility of disciples, or a preacher, or a temple president, or whatever our responsibility may be, we should be a good manager, and they should go back to Godhead, and we should go back to Godhead with them. And then that is perfect. Then we'll take advantage of these instructions given by Priyavrata, and the Bhagavatam will have fulfilled its mission. So, thank you. Any questions, comments? I was just thinking of Srila Prabhupada. He was in his last days that he was physically appearing in that particular body, because he's still here in his deity form, in his instructions. But when he was asked who will be, some Indian gentleman kind of crowded into the room and crowded his disciples out, and they asked Prabhupada who will be the next leader, because he somehow or another, sometimes they're always interested who's going to be the next leader for some reason. So Prabhupada's answer was, he said, all my disciples, whoever follows the best, he'll become the next leader. Or leaders. It's not that there's only one leader. It's not a question of just getting some official position, and then you're the leader, and then you sit back and you lead. Everyone follows. No, everyone who, as much as we become Krishna conscious, then to that extent we become the leader. Doesn't mean that because I think I'm Krishna conscious, therefore I don't listen to the managers. No, if I'm actually Krishna conscious, then I'll know how to even adjust all the different instructions I get from so many different other leaders and so many other authorities. Krishna will give me intelligence how to adjust. But if we really want to become a leader in our individual capacities, we have to try to understand, assimilate Prabhupada's instructions, put them into practice, and develop our love for Krishna and our service attitude towards Krishna and our service to Krishna, and then we'll actually be a real leader, and we'll be able to help others go back to Godhead and do the same thing too. So all of us should be leaders, and all of us are leaders, and we should become better leaders so we can help all of us go back to the spiritual world. Yes. Well, Prabhupada writes that in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's one of the verses. It's the one before Sarva Guyatma Bhuyashuni Me Paramam Vachai. Anyhow, he says, thus I've explained to you this most transcendental knowledge, deliberate on it fully, and then do what you think is best. So we're supposed to use our intelligence. Not that someone comes along and says, do this, and we say, yes, yes, of course, yes, I'll do that. And someone else comes along, don't do that, do this, yes, yes, yes. No, we're supposed to use our intelligence so we can assimilate the knowledge. We're not Krishna. We don't immediately know everything. Even Krishna doesn't do that. If you look at Krishna's pastime, some Narada Muni comes and tells about the unfortunate fate, or that Yudhisthira Maharaj wants him to come and perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Become the king of the whole, and glorify Krishna in that way. And then some representative of the kings who are imprisoned by Jarasandha comes along and says, please come immediately. All these kings are being harassed by Jarasandha. They're suffering like anything. Help us. So Krishna, he knew exactly what to do, but he asks Uddhava, what should we do? Seems completely different, contradictory suggestions. What should I do? So, he's showing us we should be a little thoughtful. Not that we immediately jump and say, yes, sir, whatever you said, whatever it was, I'll do it. I don't know what you said, I don't know what it's all about, but I'm going to do it anyhow. Rush out there, and then you turn around, hey, what did you say anyhow? You have to be a little thoughtful in Tadami Buddha Yogam Tam. When Krishna gives the intelligence, then we'll know what to do and then we'll do it. Even Lord Brahma comes, still we should be a little thoughtful and think about, take shelter of Krishna, so we understand what Brahma just said, and then we'll know what he really wants us to do, what Krishna wants us to do. So, Krishna consciousness means Buddha Yoga. It means thought, real thoughtfulness. Not just fanaticism, yes, he's the authority, we just follow. No, we really become thoughtful, and then we know what the authority really wants us to do, and then we do it, what Krishna really wants us to do, and then everyone becomes satisfied. Yes? Well, that's really an open question. You'd have to point out specific examples, because otherwise it's kind of like open-ended. There's so many possibilities. You have to... Yeah. I think if we actually have, once we get to a certain stage, a devotional service, of course at the very beginning we always have a relation with Krishna, whether we're in devotional service or not. The Super Soul is always directing us. Whether we come to the platform of anartha nivritti and our relation with the material energy diminishes significantly, that we can remain fixed in our devotional service. Well, you know, that's a stage of purification. It's not a simple stage to come to. We've been here since time immemorial, and therefore we have a lot of anarthas. And they're all centered around, you know, trying to control the material energy for good or bad, because some people are trying to do it for good, and some people are trying to do it relatively for bad, and trying to get some enjoyment, because everyone wants to be happy here. So how to actually be able to realize Krishna, the sound vibration of Hare Krishna, it's very subtle. We can say Hare Krishna, but most of us probably don't see Krishna directly manifested before us, and we're not, you know, experiencing Krishna prema every time we say Hare Krishna. But even to be on the stage, when we chant Hare Krishna and we realize the difference between ourselves and the body, and we're able to experience the taste of associating with Krishna so we can at least feel his presence, is rather an advanced position in devotional service. And before that, as it says, Matshita Matshkata Prana Bodhi Antash Parashparam Kataya Antashparam Nityam Tushanti Cha Ramanti Cha. So Krishna uses the word Tushanti and Ramanti. Tushanti means satisfaction, Ramanti means transcendental pleasure. So those who are engaged in devotional service with enthusiasm and steadiness, they first get tushanti, satisfaction. As they become purified from the modes of nature, they feel a kind of relief from the external energy. And they feel satisfied. Now, at what stage one who's actually feeling that satisfaction comes to the platform of Ramanti, where there's transcendental ecstasy and free from all anarthas, that's a very advanced stage. So we see many devotees, they're very enthusiastically engaged in devotional service, and they feel satisfied as a result of that. So that's real. If they come to a certain point and they realize that actually they have certain desires that they want to fulfill for some reason or another, because after all there are four kinds of devotees who approach Krishna, and at least the first three, those who are in distress, those who want material comfort, and those who want to more or less control the material nature in a more Krishna-conscious way, more sattvic way, then those three, they may get married, but that doesn't negate the fact that they performed devotional service before. Only the one who's actually realized he's not the body and actually come to the platform on the board of actually pure transcendental existence, then he'll probably be more reluctant to get married and entangled. But sometimes they might, just like here Priyavrata, under the order of higher authority. But if in case it happens by some other way, it just doesn't mean that they haven't made advancement or they weren't sincere devotees. It just means that they weren't on that very highly elevated platform, like the four Kumaras were. Now, one of our problems is that we have this expectation of anyone who's advanced, they must be like the four Kumaras. They must be practically, or they must be liberated. So it's not reality, and we can see many devotees become disappointed because they put their expectations, or even it's advertised like that, on what an advanced devotee is. And then when it doesn't, they turn out to be something other than what their expectations are, then everyone gets on their case, as if they were all just cheaters and whatever else, and therefore they're useless. You might as well go to hell, and you know, because that's where you belong. Or give up devotional service, because otherwise we can't claim you were actually a demon in disguise. No, we should appreciate that they tried, they got purified, they certainly made advancement, but at some stage, you know, yogas chalati manasa, they may have been deviated for one reason or another. But that's not the end of the story. Bharat Maharaj wasn't the end of the story when he became a deer. There was a happy ending to the story. And all these devotees, I can't tell that far in the future, but generally we can understand there will be a happy ending. And we should look forward to that happy ending for all of those devotees who have engaged in devotional service and help them. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada chastised very strongly one of his disciples, and he left. And then all his disciples got on this devotee's case for doing some mischief. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada was very disappointed. He said, I chastise him, that's my duty to chastise him, but I thought you would all help him. When the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he called in Krishnadas, because Krishnadas had fallen. He had become a victim to the Bhattacharyas, Bhattaharis. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him in at the end of his tour and said, you know, you're fired. So when Lord Chaitanya tells you you're fired, it's quite disturbing, because not much to look forward to. So he was very disturbed. But what did the devotees do? Hey, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said he's fired. Don't even look at him. Just back away, here he comes. You might get affected by whatever he has. No, immediately Lord Nityananda and all the other devotees, they gave him solace, they gave him service, they gave him all encouragement, and they engaged him in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's service. So that should be our mood. So we may have some difficulty, but it's not the end of the story, nor should we help or try to make it the end of the story. It won't be the end of the story. But unless we're very careful, it may be, you know, the end of one of our stories. Is that right? Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.